Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
Merry Christmas and welcome to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. My name is Jeff Westover, and I am the head footman at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas, our little corner of the internet where we have been making merry online since 1991. This episode of the Merry Little Podcast is brought to you by nobody, because we don't have a sponsor, and we'd like to change that. Between our two podcasts, this is episode number 112, stretching back 10 years this year, and every one of those episodes are available still online. Wouldn't it be a good value for a business you know to sponsor us? By sponsoring us, I guarantee you that 10 years from now, whatever business who sponsors us will still be getting heard. Sponsoring podcast episodes is inexpensive and available. Just contact me at jeff@mymerrychristmas.com to talk about it. Our Christmas in July activities here in the year 2020 have been an effort in reaching out. And that's because our goal with this quarantine COVID Christmas in July celebration has been to put as much Christmas in front of people that we can. We know people can't get out. We know folks have Christmas stuff that they want to do and they can't do it because it has been canceled. And we know this is going to probably and sadly go on for quite a while longer. So we have been trying to make as much Christmas available to our audiences via our websites, radio streams, and social media channels. And it's been a fun effort. I find other Christmas creators out there that I've heard about over the years, but have never really talked to. And now we've been talking. By doing this and featuring them on our sites and chatting with them, we have naturally engaged with a few more Christmas fans out there. Via Twitter, where I have admittedly not invested much time over the years, a new listener to this podcast left us a very kind note. And I would tell you that's the number one thing I love about the Christmas community online. From the days when we first began by sending out Santa updates by a fax machine, people have always reached out in love and in kindness. It has been from our friends around the world, those who listen and post and register and visit our sites, streams, podcasts, forums, and social media sites, that we get ideas for our content creation. This episode comes to us courtesy of these new listeners on Twitter. Those who we asked and heard from suggested that we talk about the Victorian Christmas. As I thought about that suggestion, I realized that for all the ground we've covered with Christmas history, we've only really touched on the Victorian Christmas a little bit. That's an amazing thing to say after 112 episodes. I should be ashamed of myself for not doing this sooner. So, in a plea for redemption, we offer this merry episode about the Victorian Christmas. What you're hearing is music from Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, and if you were to ever have a Christmas album, this song, known as Sleigh Ride from Three German Dances, would be on it. In fact, this song is on a number of Christmas albums. Written in 1791, not long before Mozart died, Mozart was a lover and a celebrant of both dancing and, of course, of Christmas. There are two very good reasons we know about Mozart and Christmas, because of where he was from and because of his Roman Catholic faith. That and the fact that Bach, a considerable composer of both Christmas and religious works, was a big influence on Mozart's music. Austrian Christmas traditions of the 18th century are very well known. There were Christmas trees, there were nativities, of course, and there were parties. And was there anything about a party that Mozart didn't know about? Yes, Mozart knew everything and celebrated everything about Christmas. Most Germans did. So why are we beginning our discussion about the Victorian Christmas with Mozart? The Victorian Christmas is so named after Queen Victoria of England. She was born in 1818 and died in 1901. To be fair, we tend to hear about the Victorian Christmas only in the context of Queen Victoria, who didn't become queen until 1837, and it's that period of roughly 60 years that actually makes up the era of the Victorian Christmas. Now, most of what you will read out on the internet in typical 1,000-word articles and 3-minute videos on YouTube is that Christmas in England and in Europe and around the world really didn't become a modern thing until, well, Charles Dickens. And we've talked about this before and have debunked that thoroughly. But when historians aren't laying Christmas at the door of Dickens, they are laying it then at the door of Queen Victoria. And usually they go a little further by crediting her husband, Prince Albert, for making Christmas happen in the 1840s. Well, let's bust that myth right now. Yes, Prince Albert was an enthusiastic lover of Christmas. He was, after all, German. And if you've seen the BBC production of Victoria on television, you likely think it was his bringing of Christmas trees to Windsor Castle that caused Christmas to go crazy in the culture of the 19th century. We'll stop. That isn't even close to the story of Christmas in England in the early 19th century, or even in the 18th century. Ask Mozart. Christmas was a thing, kids. In Europe, all of Europe. England, Germany, Austria, Belgium, France, Italy, Greece. I don't care where you go in Europe. Christmas was huge in the 18th century, long before Queen Victoria. Victoria, when she was but a child, a young Princess Victoria, well, she celebrated a pretty grand Christmas, a Christmas you would expect of a royal, and a Christmas you would expect of somebody living when she did. Christmas was a thing, kids. You see, Victoria had a grandmother, and she was German. This great Carol of Christmas, which comes to us from a very old recording of the Vienna Boys Choir, which is Austrian, comes from Germany, where Christmas trees were a tradition dating back hundreds of years, even by the 18th century. This song and the tradition of the tree were a part of the upbringing of those in Victoria's German family tree. Victoria's grandmother was Charlotte of Mecklenburg, wife to King George III. Theirs was a union made of royal tradition, At the age of 17, the German princess was brought to England to marry George III in 1761, and their marriage would bring forth 15 children, a fact that Charlotte was not shy in admitting was a real burden to her. But it would be those 15 children to whom the royal tradition of Christmas in the House of Windsor really began. After all, Charlotte was a product of 18th century Germany, which was then, as now, well, literally submerged in their very own rich culture of Christmas. In fact, if we're being honest, many of the modern Christmas traditions we celebrate around the world were born in Germany. Charlotte grew up in a world where St. Nicholas was celebrated on the 6th of December. It was a world of Christmas markets and a season of cold and snow. The Christmas tree, or a variant of it known as the kissing bough or the yew branch, had been a German tradition there for centuries before Charlotte was born. Music, of course, has a rich history in the German Christmas. The song you just heard, O Tannenbaum, is German. So too is O Come All Ye Faithful. Also from Germany came what many call the greatest of Christmas classical music, from Johann Sebastian Bach. Now, if we wanted a 3-hour podcast, we'd play the whole thing for you. Why is it so long? Well, because it was, for Bach, as it was for most Germans, a celebration of the birth of Christ, which is not a one-day event. Written in 1734, this most famous of classical Christmas music was intended for the season, the entire season. Germans, you see, celebrate Advent, which customarily launched the traditional celebration of the 12 days of Christmas, starting on Christmas Eve and going through the 6th of January. So Bach, you see, had time to fill. For Charlotte, becoming British royalty only opened up more of Christmas to her. Music was central to maintaining her sanity as a mother of 15 children. And who were her friends and influences? Well, Bach, Mozart, and George Friedrich Handel. You remember him, right? Composer of Messiah? Yes, that too is German. What I'm getting at here is that Christmas was no mystery in Europe before Victoria. It was huge. Queen Charlotte of the 18th century was a Christmas freak before she became the Queen of England. She was one of us kids. Remember, Victoria was Charlotte's granddaughter. For her own children, Charlotte, for many Christmases, stunned family and friends with her yew bough, which was lighted. It was really just an evergreen portion of a tree that was fastened to the end of the table at Christmas and then decorated with candles and fruits. It became the centerpiece of the royal Christmas celebration. In later years, around the year 1800, she did as most Germans had been doing for some time. She just brought the whole tree into the house. After all, she had a palace. Royal family records from the time indicate the tradition grew even from there with several decorated trees. And long before Victoria was born, the tradition of Christmas trees in the royal family and indeed within the higher classes of England were all the rage. And it wasn't dying by the time her granddaughter Victoria was born in 1818. Oh, that reminds me. What song could have been sung to Victoria as a lullaby? Well, the German hymn Silent Night, which was written in the year she was born for a church service in Germany at Christmas. Christmas, you see, was still a thing then, before Victoria and before Dickens. And it was, too, a thing in America, by the way. When George Washington peered over the Delaware in 1776, who did he see? Well, he saw Germans, Hessians. And what was his battle plan then built around? It was built around Christmas. Washington knew these Hessians were traditional Germans. He could see from whatever vessel he was crossing the Delaware in the Christmas trees they had lighted that Christmas night in 1776. Christmas, you see, was a thing, too, in America in the 18th century. Why, then, do we credit Queen Victoria instead of Queen Charlotte for all of these traditions? Well, you see, English Christmas history suffers as much as American Christmas history does. For some inexplicable reason, historians think Christmas was dead before the adult life of Victoria and of Charles Dickens. And why do they think that? Well, it's a funny thing. It had to do with the media.
At our meal now fat we feel, Granny's being sick. Such a hoot playing Trivial Pursuit, cause everybody is so thick. With the answers wishbone snapped, crackers crack, take turns to re-crack jokes. Gran guffaws and wets a draw, swallows dentures nearly chokes. With a full belly, we see what's on the telly, we hope there's something new. But of course it's the Wizard of Oz and an episode of Doctor Who. Tom Baker, it won't be long before James Bond's on, the one where he hangs off a train. Roger Moore's acting is quite poor, but his eyebrows keep us entertained. Christmas tea, oh what will it be? Turkey sandwiches, if you please. Cabbage red and sliced white bread, pick a lily and a lump of cheese. Stuffing cold, sausage rolls, there's nothing we won't scoff. We'll even try those cheap pork pies if the yucky jelly's all picked off. Eat roses from the tin, till you can't fit one more in. Grandad blocks the toilet, it's the 14th time he's been. It's really time for bed, we doze on the sofa instead. Granny sleeps in a sleep so deep, we poke her cause we think she's dead. Oh what a lovely day, raise a glass of Matthias Rosé. There really is nothing quite like the British Christmas way. Such a special day, hip 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 hooray. There really is nothing quite like the British Christmas day.
That song gives just a smidge of the modern Christmas culture in England. It's just as diverse and unique as anything we have in America, and of course, there's a great deal of crossover between our two countries. In fact, we cannot have Christmas without each other. It's in our blood. We didn't realize it as the colonies broke away, but in truth, Christmas is one of the few things that has united us over time. What has made that possible is the media. You see, what made the Christmas of Victoria and Albert, and if we're speaking fairly, of Charles Dickens as well, is that the media made it all public. They spread it. The modern media got its start right around the turn of the 19th century, and that, coupled with the Industrial Revolution, is what really drove the popularity and more of the uniformity in the celebration of Christmas. Take, for example, the Christmas tree. Realistically speaking, America had barely heard about the Christmas tree in the times of George Washington. There were pockets of America, notably among the German and Dutch communities of Pennsylvania, where Christmas trees were already a tradition in America in the 18th century. There's a clear record of that. And the American media discovered the Christmas tree in Boston in the 1830s. So before Victoria became famous for her tradition of the Christmas tree, it was already a thing in places. But what changed was the ability to put an image in newsprint, and that fired up the public imagination in 1848 when it hit newspapers worldwide. The Christmas tree, though ancient in tradition, could finally be seen by generations now far removed from the European motherlands of England, France, Scotland, Germany, Austria, and of course all over Scandinavia. When you dig into newspapers.com, what you find in the late 1840s and into the 1850s are repeated reactions of Americans and Brits alike who were seeing the Christmas trees for the first time in their life. And this is why the historians credit Victoria with the Christmas tree. As the royal family does today, they did then. They set trends. And nothing was trendier than the Christmas tree in 1840. Well, there was another trendy thing out there.
There's an old Christmas card in an old dusty trunk, and it brings back sweet memories dear to me. Though it's faded and worn, it's as precious as the morn when I found it 'neath our first Christmas tree.
Well, we've told before the history of Christmas cards and their birth in England in 1843, the same Christmas that Dickens published A Christmas Carol. It is important to understand the dynamics of everything involved that made Christmas cards popular. You see, sending Christmas greetings had long been a thing in Christmas history. It was a practice among heads of states and military leaders. It was a common thing for loved ones at a distance. It's just that sending such greetings required handwritten letters and long waits by slow systems of mail that were available at the time. Christmas cards were kind of expensive at first, and many folks didn't send a ton of them. But as printing technology improved and became cheaper, and as mail systems became faster, the practice of Christmas card sending gathered steam in the second half of the 19th century. Victoria is said to have spurred the tradition by having her children send cards to their friends, which would, of course, be a very, well, royal thing to do. But it was really the Christmas tree that was publicized that captured the imagination. I turn to my own ancestors of 1850, who by this time were in Utah, and who saw their first American Christmas tree at a Christmas party held by the pioneers of Salt Lake City. That Christmas and that tree, set up under the direction of Brigham Young, who said it was, quote, for the children, unquote, made a huge impression on the 300 or so people gathered for that Christmas Eve event in Salt Lake. It is after that Christmas that we see mentioned in pioneer journals of the 1850s, Christmas trees brought into individual homes. It's a cool thing to have such access to family history. But where you can't find such personal records, you can find abundant newspaper accounts of the blossoming Christmas tradition and trends like Christmas trees of the mid-19th century. While we can tie some of those traditions to media coverage of Victoria's and Albert's high-style royal Christmas, there are other things that bear mention from the Victorian era of Christmas that had nothing to do with it.
Up on the housetop, reindeer paws, out jumps good old Santa Claus, down through the chimney with lots of toys, all for the little ones, Christmas joys. Chimney with good Saint Nick. First comes a stocking of little Nell. Oh dear Santa, fill it well. Give her a dolly that laughs and cries. One that will open and shut her eyes.
Hey,
ho, 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 who would go? Ho, 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 who would go? Up on the housetop, click, click, click. Down through the chimney with good Saint Nick.
American Christmas music of the 19th century was a big influence on Christmas during these times. Up on the Housetop, Jingle Bells, O Holy Night, Joy to the World, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Away in a Manger, O Little Town of Bethlehem, and Jolly Old St. Nicholas were all famous Christmas songs of the Victorian era. But of course, older Christmas carols and songs from Christmas past remained popular in the 19th century. But the fact that so many songs we know and love and perform or listen to today came from the 19th century is kind of a miracle. And why? Well, take, for example, this song, which was written in the 19th century, that maybe you've never heard before, or maybe you have.
Yeah.
That Christmas song, called Far, Far Away on Judea's Plain, has a very personal connection for me. It was written in 1869 for a Christmas program at a church in St. George, Utah. Its backstory is similar to other inspired Christmas songs. Choir conductor John McFarlane was charged with not only putting together the Christmas program for the first meetings at the St. George Tabernacle in 1869, but he was asked to introduce a new Christmas carol. He teamed up with a man by the name of Charles Walker, who provided the lyrics. But the composition of the song itself proved to be a challenge. Even after days of struggling and turning to God in prayer, McFarlane had a difficult time getting something down on paper for this song. Finally, with just days to go, something awoke him in the middle of the night, and it was the medley of the song that we just heard. His wife asked him what was wrong, and he told her, "I hear it now. I need to write it down." So there in the dark at night, wearing their night clothes, husband with pen in hand and wife holding an oil lamp, the music to Far, Far Away on Judea's Plain was put on paper. When he finished, they together listened to it for the first time on the organ that he had in their home. John McFarlane pulled off the song and the big Christmas event there in the St. George Tabernacle. And in his choir was my fourth great-grandmother, who was born in 1802. And I cannot hear that song without thinking of her. That's the power of music, and especially the power of Christmas music. She sang it then, and I sing it now. It gives us a connection. How does a song like that, or any 19th century song like Jingle Bells or Up on the Housetop, survive into our day? Back then, it wasn't, of course, in recordings of sounds or music. It is in the written records of the sheet music. McFarlane, like every other composer out there, back to Mozart, Bach, and Handel before, distributed their music on paper. Musicians of every skill level, mostly in churches, but also in community choirs and orchestras, would then read the music and perform the songs. Christmas music survives by way of tradition. And tradition is something that we have to be careful with, because in times and places, traditions do sometimes wane or fade. Why that happens is sometimes complex. Take, for example, the attitude today in the year 2020 about Christmas cards. I see all over social media and in articles and among so-called experts that Christmas cards are a dying tradition, and they blame the internet. And there's some truth to how the internet has, in the space of 30 years, changed the practice of sending Christmas greetings. You see, it's not cards that are the tradition. Greetings are the tradition. We send as much, and I would argue that we send more Christmas greetings than we ever have. These days, it might be in the act of sharing a Christmas video, or posting something Christmassy to a social media channel, or even texting a friend on Christmas Eve. Just as sending a penny postcard in the 19th century revolutionized Christmas greetings then, the internet has revolutionized and changed the way we send Christmas greetings in the 21st century. We still send greetings. Just maybe not as many in the form of actual Christmas cards. But traditions never really die. We just have to be careful how we talk about them. From a website, from a historian I will not name, comes this absurd statement. Quote, "Before Victoria's reign, which began in 1837, nobody in Britain had heard of Christmas crackers, Santa Claus, or Christmas cards, or even Father Christmas, let alone Rudolph and his red nose. Most people did not have Christmas Day off as a holiday. They worked. Christmas was not practiced because it was nearly killed off altogether, by English Puritans of nearly 200 years before." End quote. Well, this is just a misleading and mostly false statement. And it's a dangerous kind of statement for a historian to make. The Victorian Christmas did indeed have some to do with Queen Victoria, but it had more to do with a changing world in the 19th century of traditions that were evolving. It just didn't appear out of the ether. The Christmas tree, while new to many people on both sides of the Atlantic, evolved quickly in the 19th century, for example. President Franklin Pierce, and perhaps the only accomplishment of his administration, was the first president to put up a Christmas tree in the White House in 1856. Just 38 years later, the Christmas tree in the White House would look entirely different. Christmas trees, you see, had already evolved in many significant ways. Take, for example, the addition of Christmas lights. They date to around 1880, and of course, the first Christmas lights were a great exception and a stunning revelation in the new possibilities of Christmas tree decorating. Said a Detroit newspaper article in 1884 after seeing Christmas lights on a tree for the first time, quote, "It was brilliantly lighted with 80 lights in all encased in dainty glass eggs and about equally divided between white, red, and blue. One can hardly imagine anything prettier," unquote. In 1894, President Cleveland had the first lighted Christmas tree in the White House. By the time Victoria died in 1901, Christmas lights were already a thing, a widespread thing. But are Christmas lights considered Victorian? Well, not in the least. They're considered vintage if they date back to around 1900, but not Victorian. Now, I love the story of Victoria and Albert, as many people do. They were young and progressive during a period of great change in the history of Christmas. One of the lesser-known stories of their epic Christmas celebration was in their gift-giving. In the 1860s, Albert and Victoria embraced the evolving technology of photography and gave each other the gift of pictures at Christmas time. Kind of a rare thing. And for you, that is what makes the Victorian era of Christmas so exciting to explore. It was a period of accelerated change in the celebrations of Christmas. And we have a whole lot more to tell you about it, and we will, in future episodes. Join us at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, where we celebrate Christmas of every era. From MyMerryChristmas.com, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.